A communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
A communication disruption can only mean one thing:
negotiation. We've lost all communication.
Invasion. What will the future of Star Wars bring?
You must contact me.
You must contact me and listen to Reed.
They wouldn't dare.
It's unthinkable.
In this CO Bibbles Bubble Bubble Star Wars Prequels Appreciation Podcast.
It's outrageous.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Babel Bubble, or when we're talking about Star Wars, a homage to the original name, CO Bibbles Babel Bubble. Now, diehard fans of the show will recognize and remember that every 11 episodes, we are joined by the truly magnanimous, original, and wonderful Sabologist from It's True, All of It, a Star Wars podcast. And so even though I launched a second season where this is season 2, episode 5, this is the 55th episode overall. So we're going to keep the trend going to celebrate that every other 11. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners and viewers of all genders, let's give Sabologist a welcoming hand. Sabologist, welcome back to the show.
Oh, great. Thank you very much for having me on again. And I'm so excited and glad that even though your show is so wonderful and it's exciting that it's changed, I'm not up to date with it because there's certain shows I haven't watched, but I'm happy that it's still like an episode 55 so I can continue with the familiarity.
Well, you know what? It would not be the Babel Bubble in any form without you. So I'm glad that you get to keep your streak going as a regular guest here. And, you know, I'm very proud of both of us for keeping this cross-global friendship of ours going via these recordings. Whenever I'm on your show or you're on mine, getting the Texas-Australia connection going. So what's fun about when we hit these episodes, the every 11th, is Sabologist will sometimes pitch an idea that he wants to talk about, or I'll do it this way, or sometimes we'll meet in the middle. And so today is an episode that Sabologist came up with, which is looking back at when the Star Wars prequels were released and what was the general buzz and feeling that we were both thinking about it, because there is an age gap between the two of us. So what was it like for me as a younger child, and what was like for Sabologist as someone who was older than I was, as a kind of a half a generation further back than me, and someone who had grown up and been around with the original, more familiar with the original trilogy. And especially looking at some differences, that what was it like for me watching Star Wars from the American perspective as it was coming out, and what it was like for Sabologist from the Australian perspective. Because, you know, as global as the franchise is, it does cross borders, we do have our own unique ways of interacting with the franchise based on, you know, where we're from and what are the cultural trends that are surrounding us and where some of the actors are from and whether or not that touches with us personally, because that's where we're from as well. So, Sabologist, why don't you just give us a little biographical information about yourself? How old were you when The Phantom Menace hit theaters? What were your feelings as someone who knew and loved the original trilogy about what was coming up? What were you expecting? So on and so forth.
Okay, so as you know, so Australia, and especially in that time during the 90s, we were quite still in some ways backward or way back in a different world to, say, the United States, Europe, and other places around the world. And so not having – obviously we had the internet, but not that clear, fast connection, not everyone having an access to a computer, not everyone having internet all the time. So we sometimes got information from different people, and if we got access to like an internet computer, say when we're studying, like I was studying at TAFE, that's when I'd get on StarWars.com to find out, well, the official information. But it was a kind of interesting, different type of build-up. And because it was the first and there was only that one movie, especially for The Phantom Menace, say 16 years coming later, that we've been waiting for, and we were 8 or 9 years old since we saw the last movie, or we saw the Ewoks Caravan of Courage. They had that in movie theaters. It wasn't a TV thing. It was actually shown in the movie theaters. It was like, wow, you know. So, you know, growing up with that sort of stuff, being sort of still isolated and segregated. Like, well, I still had that feeling that we were far apart, away from the world. Whereas I feel during the early 2000s and stuff, we became more and more, and then, you know, the last 10 years or so, we're all connected, everyone's connected. So I guess the first thing I'll say, I won't go too much into The Phantom Menace. I'll just talk a little bit about that because I'm going to probably highlight mainly on this conversation on Attack of the Clones because that was quite unique. But a lot of us did have that disappointment because we see the trailer and you know how you see, like, they show that bit when the Gungans are walking, you know, like with the, gosh, I can't even think of what their animals they ride. What are they called? Gee.
You know what? I can't remember them either, but it's when they're walking out of the mist.
Yeah.
Right? That was the opening shot. Yeah.
Just that visual, we thought, wow, this is going to be so good. Oh, that mysterious. How cool is that? And for us, you know, we were disappointed. We weren't kids. We were 22, 25, 20 years old, 18 years old. We didn't want Jar Jar. We didn't want a kid Anakin hero. But if you were a kid, if you are a kid, for sure, I can see that you would connect to that more. And that's great that you, at the time, you would not have thought about it. It was just, you know, Star Wars hate kind of thing, you know, that going around, which I'm sure it was around the world. But this is talking about my age group, and it's I'm not here talking on the podcast to say, oh, it was a horrible experience. I'm just trying to share to express that was what was sort of happening. And I never liked to talk about it or reflect or remember it as much. But just moving forward, that was sort of the initial thing of The Phantom Menace. I mean, we were so excited seeing the special editions, going to the movies for the very first time, seeing a Star Wars movie. The only one I ever got to see was Return of the Jedi. So there was a lot of us that never saw it at the movies. So that was the beginning of it, really. And then people not liking it as much, even though that happened, and still to this day, I just loved Qui-Gon Jinn and Liam Neeson. Like, it was so great to see Ewan McGregor, but I knew, oh, he's not a major part of this movie. He just doesn't have a part. I can see he's going to take parts in part two and part three with Anakin, and that's his role. So I wasn't too sort of concerned that he didn't have a big part, but I was just so over the moon and happy with how amazing Qui-Gon Jinn was from day one all up to the same day. So I hear people that appreciate Qui-Gon Jinn, and especially when they learned from Revenge of the Sith that he trains Obi-Wan being a Force ghost and learning more stuff, like we talked about a Master Apprentice, like 20 years later, people go, oh, I can appreciate it. No, from day one, I've always loved him, and that never changed and never changed my thoughts of the movie of Phantom Menace, but I always loved and liked and respected George Lucas so much, going, this is a kid's movie. He's targeting it to kids, getting new people into it, like yourself and whoever else, that we didn't realize until you guys started becoming young adults yourself that, like, oh my gosh, it did make a connection to all these people. Wow. We thought we were the only ones, you know, we thought we owned it because we grew up with it. But that's just in a nutshell, Phantom Menace, because it was still such a great experience to have Star Wars back, having just seeing a Jedi Council, seeing Coruscant, knowing that Coruscant came from the novels of the Heir to the Empire trilogy, the Thrawn, well, you know, trilogy, it's first Timothy Zahn novels that we came out in 91, so betting up to 99, just those sorts of things taken away from the expanded universe. And I guess that's in a nutshell with The Phantom Menace. So I didn't want to say too much about that, but there you go. Like, what about you, Reed? Is it like, oh, I think I've pretty much said what it was like in Australia and my age, early 20s. What about you? I don't know. Does you want to share something, that different experience, or?
Yeah. So I did not catch The Phantom Menace in theaters. I was a little too young for that. I had seen A New Hope on VHS from my local library, but my parents went to go see A Phantom Menace. And I remember them coming home feeling very disappointed by the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. How?
And they were just really worried. I was five.
How old were your parents? Sorry.
How old were my parents? That's a good question. Let's see. My dad was born in 61.
So he would have been
38 and my mom was born in 62. So yeah, 38 and 37 years.
So old. I'm just
So they had the teenage experience when the first Star Wars movies came out. Yeah, so, you know, the original trilogy to them was like the date movies for them as teenagers.
Okay.
And then in college and stuff like that, you know. And I think, yeah, by the time Jedi came out, I think my dad had already graduated college. Mm. So it's interesting. Yeah, the original trilogy, or the tail end of the original trilogy came out for him when the sequel trilogy came out for me. Because I was just out of college when The Force Awakens came out. So
interesting
parallel there, just in terms of comparative ages. But yeah, I was familiar enough with Star Wars. I was able to date very recently my first interest in Star Wars because my parents were going through some old things of mine and they found that I drew what's very clearly a TIE fighter and an X-Wing.
Oh, wow.
When I was four.
Mm.
So at least that's the first time I must have interacted with it in some form. And then, you know, I've told the story of how I was introduced to the Phantom Menace on the very first episode of C.O. Bibble's Babble Bubble, how I went to go to a Sam's Club with my family, which is a big wholesaler place like Costco or something along those lines. Mm. And anyhow, at the front section they had, this is where the movies could be found, and the Phantom Menace had just come out on VHS. And they were showing it on a loop in the TVs. And when I walk in, I see this magnificent toad man holding a glowing purple orb over his head. And I think, who is this magnificent creature yelling peace? Yeah. There must be something to be said here. And then the credits roll. I'm like, well, holy crap, that's the end. I got to try to catch the rest of this movie. But of course, since I was, you know, just a child, I couldn't just be seated in front of this TV. So we would weave our way through the store, and I kept finding ways back to the TV section. Oh, maybe I'll catch it. Like, I see a little snippet of the pod race. Or, you know, a snippet of the Battle of Naboo. And I thought, this is totally awesome.
Mm.
And so I got the VHS and then I watched it at home and it became one of my most watched movies for sure. And like you were saying, you know, Jake Lloyd's young Anakin was very much targeted to me. Mm. I mean, he and I only have a few years age difference. We're both of that, you know, mid-millennial generation right there. So there's a lot of similarities. As a kid, I wanted to get into acting, mm-hmm. and even though I was born in Texas, I did live in New Jersey for a little bit between the ages of three and ten, and my go-to monologue when I would do auditions, I never landed anything big, but when my go-to monologue, if you could bring it up monologue, was Anakin's, "Are you an angel?" to Padme in Watto's junk shop. And it's funny because that what he says in the movie is not long enough, so I did the more flushed out monologue that's in the novelization, and you know, I just fell in love with it immediately. But I didn't quite have all the merchandise and toys and other sorts of stuff for the Phantom Menace in particular, just because, like I said, I, you know, at that age wasn't getting an allowance yet, or, you know, knew how to I had requests. My first Lego set was Qui-Gon and Darth Maul on Naboo. It's basically just two minifigures and a speeder bike, and I think a moisture farm tower, but I thought that was the coolest thing. And so I had a few little tidbits. Yeah, it wasn't really until Attack of the Clones that I started collecting merchandise myself, you know, that's like, oh, I can get my little, you know, $10 a week or $5, whatever, and save up and buy this particular action figure. So it was very cool to have, to be thrust into that as a kid. And you know, it's something that I talk about a lot on the Babble Bubbles, the fact that, you know, Star Wars was the first of an eventual series of franchises that launch in the early 2000s and being around all that, you know, the Harry Potter films, for instance, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, the X-Men films, so on and so forth. But Star Wars in 1999 kind of is a prediction of, well, this is what's the next, you know, 20 plus years, and we're still in the middle of that are going to hold. So we'll go ahead and jump to Attack the Clones, because you said you were saving most of your stuff for that, or at least more than for the Phantom Menace. So I know you got some interesting tidbits there about some of the people in Attack the Clones, from the Australian perspective and stuff like that. So why don't you go ahead?
Sure. So just to the tail end of, Phantom Menace, obviously that other disappointment was like, oh, this really cool Darth Maul character. Wow, this Ray Park is doing double lightsaber, all this fighting, and then he dies. So you know he wasn't going to be in the next movie. So, but the thing is, you know, when you come into the Clone Wars, it was just so happy to bring that back. But yeah, and going into figures, Phantom Menace, yeah, like it's Star Wars again. So I bought, all of some of the main characters, you know, but not a lot. And still to this day, the when they came out with the Darth Maul head on the cover of the packaging, I've still only got like 10 or 12, you know. There wasn't many that I really liked into. But now as we're getting into the Attack of the Clones, this is where we thought, okay, all our disappointments of Phantom Menace, because you know, I wanted to see Jedi fighting in the Sith, and I thought there was lots of Sith. So that was my other thing, like, what? There's only two Sith? I want to see all these battles with Sith and Jedi. So like, it kind of broke my heart a bit, you know. But I got that in Clone Wars. But so when Attack of the Clones was coming in, I put everything into it. I thought, this is going to be phenomenal. It's Obi-Wan and Anakin. And this is like another reason why, in some ways, when Clone Wars came out, this is, I'm just going on a tiny bit of a tangent to connect to this as well. Clone Wars was obviously aimed at kids, obviously, animation. Obviously, still fans like me would watch it, like I did when they showed the movie in the movie theaters and I followed it. But obviously, you got characters like an Ahsoka for young people, for young children. And I thought, oh, this is great, but I thought we're going to get Obi-Wan and Anakin. This is an opportunity to have more time with them. So anyway, these are just feelings I'm sharing, and I'm not sharing it to go, oh, this was the worst experience ever, or no. It's like there's so many stuff I love about it. So I'm just – listeners, don't lose me. I'm as I say, I'm always excited that I never get a chance to talk to someone about prequels, as in characters or Clone Wars episodes, because people weren't watching it. We were in our 30s by then, and not as interested in it, and people just were not interested in the prequels. And even though there's certain things I didn't like about them or whatever, there was so much I loved about it, so I missed out on all that, so I get to do it now. But Attack of the Clones, I went to the shops. I think this is just before the movies came out, because they released the figures, and I bought 20 or 30 odd figures. I spent $200 or $300 on Attack of the Clones figures. I just bought every character that looked cool. So, and I put in, had this massive bag. I was on my way to my friend's house that are not into Star Wars at all. And we're looking at all the characters and I'm getting excited, and they're not into Star Wars. Like, no one was, man. That's the thing. No one was into Star Wars when throughout my 20s that I knew of. Like, I was even in the Star Wars fan club, and I knew a few people, and I went there 4 times a year, and that was my only connection. But so they just looked at it, they go, oh, look at all these characters. And then they see Kit Fisto, and we go, oh, Kit Fisto. And they made up silly names like Kit Fist Up or Plo Koon, and they called him Poo Clown. And we're just having a good laugh. And I was like, this is so cool. You know, look at it. They've all got lightsabers and stuff. And yeah, anyway. But the thing was, the uniqueness about episode 2, the first thing was USA were getting interested in using Fox Sydney Studios to use our studios, because it's cheaper because of the dollar, especially then. Like, I think we're only getting 50 cents from one of our Aussie dollars. We're only getting 50 American cents back then, you know. It was or even maybe 60, maybe 70 if you're lucky. I remember the time when it went up to 70 or 80, we're going, oh my gosh, you know, the US dollar is so cheap, you know. Just those sort of memories. But so we thought, when that you have like a Melbourne and Sydney rivalry, like this is like you have, say, I can relate it to, say, in Spain, you have Barcelona and Madrid rivalry, like two major sort of cities. None of them are capitals. Canberra is the capital administration parliament of our country, which a lot of people don't know. And if you don't live in Australia, why should you know? How should you know? You probably think Sydney is because it's a bigger city. Like, it's the same thing with Rio de Janeiro of Brazil. You might think that is, but it's Brasilia and so forth. Anyway, but we would say, so what is it, Sydney? Like, at our Star Walking fan members, as you know, I'm a member of Star Walking, and I've been going since 99. They built up to Phantom Menace, and so it's over 22 years now. And they said, so what is Sydney got that Melbourne doesn't have? And we go, episode 2. Like, we were jealous and envious, and we used to say funny things like that. But obviously we were looking forward to this movie because Anakin's possible turn to the dark side, or a build up to it, and we got that, so that was kind of cool. And his love for Padme, And also it was basically the Aussie actors, what we're getting into. So I was watching a Australian drama TV series called The Secret Life of Us, I think in 2000 or 2001, probably more like 2001. And you have Joel Edgerton in that. And when I found out Joel Edgerton was going to be in Attack of the Clones, I thought, oh, how so cool. He's such a cool guy. This is hilarious. This is great. And to find out who's going to be Luke's uncle, I just thought, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. This was, like, huge. And not only that, like, you have the Death Sticks guy. Oh, I think I wrote his name down and I've forgotten. You probably know his name.
The character's name is Sleaze Bagano.
That's it, Sleaze Bagano, yes.
Because the sleaze bag is in there. And I don't remember the actor's name, but he was Mouse in The Matrix.
Yeah, and he was also an Aussie actor in, I think, Home and Away. Like, I never really knew him, but it was just like another added extra thing. Like, we'd always talk about one Aussie actor that was in TK 427 your post in The New Hope, but this was like getting more. And not only that, like, as I spoke about, Owen Lars was Joel Edgerton. And for anyone listening out there, I don't know if you know Joel Edgerton well, an actor. I have watched so many other movies of his. They're good. They're great. They're high quality. American, Aussie, mixture. It's great. There was a massive documentary on him during last year, during our lockdown. And I watched it and talking about him growing up with his brother, whose brother was a filmering, editing, and he wanted to be an actor, and look at him where he came. He was even a movie with him. Oh, I can't remember what it's called. It was a Western, but Natalie Portman was in it, and that was his lover. That was pretty cool. There's another connection. So he played Lowenars, but the father of Owen Lars, Klee Glass, Jack Thompson, huge Australian actor. Was very popular throughout the 70s and 80s, probably even earlier as well, and he was on a lot of commercials. So it was just hilarious for us because we're so used to Americans, American accent or English or things we're distanced from. Do you know what I mean? So then we saw something that was close to home. It's like, in some ways, like, that's spoiling it. This is Star Wars. You can't do that. But then in some ways it was kind of cool. So it's kind of a unique, weird experience as an Australian. And I just felt that these Aussie actors will be coming now over after year, more kind of iconic, you know, Heath Ledger, that sort of thing, early 2000s, that was coming in, that we were Hugh Jackman and everyone else. I mean, Nicole Kidman would have been doing it for a while, but I could name more and more, but felt like we're on an even ground, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And, the actress who played Beru, Bonnie Peace, I believe she's also Australian.
Yeah.
I maybe not coming in with as significant as a filmography to the Australian audience as some of the other people, because I think Beru was her first major acting role.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't looked into much of her past.
I haven't either. And yeah, no, it was no one that we sort of recognized. It was just more Joel Edgerton because he was just up and coming and he just recently appeared. So, and I was watching him, so I knew of him. And yeah, Jack Thompson been around for, you know, donkey's years kind of thing. So donkey's ages. So yeah. But no, didn't really notice her at all, to be honest.
Yeah, she actually has kind of an interesting story after the Star Wars films that was recently featured on an HBO docuseries. She was in the cult Nexium.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband, who she met via that cult, was a significant figure in there. And the two of them left together. Actually, she left first and then tried to, were part of the movement to bring the cult down. So they're featured very heavily in this docuseries. And it's kind of unfortunate. The only way she was making money, because the cult took so much of her funds from her, was by attending things like Star Wars celebrations and other conventions just for autographs as Beru. And that really put a dark taint on the role, because she associated the role with such a dark time in her life. And that's why I was really excited to see both her and Joel Edgerton on the cast list for the Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
So it'll be nice getting the two of them back there and continuing that that tradition that they started. It's it's neat. You know, I hadn't thought about that, how seeing the arrival of Australian actors or just actors from a particular country on, you know, the big Hollywood screen, making it, you know, across the Pacific to LA and has more people get to know. That must have been very exciting for y'all over there.
And look, it was a huge look. There's many history regarding Australian film connections to overseas, USA or Europe or anywhere else making movies or doing things. But this was just significant for me growing up. And I mean, even now, like that in Queensland, they're looking at making some studios. And I rode my bike past one in Melbourne where they're making some room to build one as well, like for international, you know, you guys, everyone. So it was just sort of more another huge step forward for that sort of thing in the film industry, and just seeing these actors, like as a person growing up in the 80s and most of pretty much throughout all the 90s, these American actors, these are the films we're getting. Yeah, we got a few Australian films and whatever not here, and you'd have to really search and go outside the box, like I still do today. Like as I said before, when I was talking to you before we started the show, I watch a streaming service called SBS On Demand, and it's showing you world movies and interesting different types of angles of news and Australian culture. But the thing of that, we now have more and more Aussie actors, as I mentioned those names before, and they're all coming over to America to film, and you know, not just Australia, maybe from New Zealand and like, as well. Taika Waititi, I've been watching his stuff recently. And it's great that we're all connected these days. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so Russell Crowe is from New Zealand, right? But he lives primarily in Australia, or he moved.
That's there, right. Yeah.
At some point. Yep. Yeah, so, and that's kind of the 90s is sort of his real coming out party too, yep. You know, with LA Confidential, and then of course winning the Oscar for Gladiator in 2000, being nominated the following year for A Beautiful Mind. And then, like you named Hugh Jackman, which, tying back to what I was saying earlier with the launch of franchises, I mean, you cannot imagine the X-Men without Hugh Jackman.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, early 2000s, there you go. Yeah, and that was kind of another huge step as well. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when pivoting to my experience with Attack of the Clones, yeah, that was my first real movie theater going experience with Star Wars. That was, I was very lucky, or I guess I should say am still very lucky that I have an early May birthday. So because of that, I got to have a lot of birthday parties in tandem with major film releases. You know, so I did it with Star Wars. I did it with a lot of the Marvel movies when I was in high school. And stuff in between and onward from there. And so I had an Attack of the Clones themed birthday, you know, with all the themed napkins and plates and whatnot. And that's when I first started getting a lot of Star Wars merchandise, because it was given to me as gifts. Yep. Right? So, you know, I got like, oh, here's a little Count Dooku minifigure. And here's Anakin. And here's, Obi-Wan's Jedi Starfighter, which to this day is still probably my favorite Jedi Starfighter, largely because of that Lego set I got. But I do love the ring that his ship transports in, so it can, you know, jump to hyperspace, which is, you know, different than what we had seen about how X-Wings can jump to hyperspace by themselves. So that's a good showing that, oh, this is an older type of technology where the ship needs aid to, you know, fly into deep space on its own. And so I really, you know, meshed well with that. And yeah, I started to collect a lot of the figures that were coming out. You know, at the same time, Lord of the Rings was in the middle of its, you know, franchise release. Once again, another highlight to your part of the world with New Zealand as a primary focus, you know, as the filming location for Middle Earth. Seeing, you know, New Zealand director and Peter Jackson and various New Zealand actors there. But I was collecting Lord of the Rings action figures the same time I was collecting Attack of the Clones figures. So I would have these comical mishmash battles between, oh, you know, here's Legolas taking on Anakin, who would win, and I could, you know, act it out there. And it was just a wealth of things to play with and having that overlap. And that's really where my love of franchises were starting to build onto one another. And by the time I got Attack of the Clones on VHS, that then became like the Phantom Menace got shelved for Attack of the Clones to be my most watched movie. And, you know, to this day, I think that's the Star Wars movie I have seen the most of, just circumstantially as a kid, and just being that was the thing to just watch again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, we'll go ahead and close out with to the third and final movie of the prequels. Let's fast forward to 2005 here. Tell me what was going on with you when we get Revenge of the Sith.
I think that one, most of that, my memories were there's a huge build up to Attack of the Clones. Obviously, there was for Phantom Menace as well, but the period just building up to Attack of the Clones is we knew what the universe looked like now. We knew what Coruscant was, what the Jedis were, what characters were going to be in it, what actors we were familiarized with them. Yeah, we were again, yes, for Revenge of the Sith, and we knew what was to happen and still absolutely loved it and enjoyed it. I still feel I saw Attack of the Clones in the movie theaters more than I did Revenge of the Sith, probably not by much, but I just kept enjoying Star Wars and that whole, I mean, the reveal of Owen Lars, Joel Edgerton, he was already there. So there was nothing else sort of new coming up in terms of that sort of type of experience, but it was still, the final one to come. And yeah, great. I enjoyed it, and in some ways it was one of my favorite of the three, and I don't know what else I can sort of say about it, because it was that thing of, you know, it was rushed. It was sad that that was the storyline, and we knew it was like, yeah, we know what the story is because we know from the originals what's got to happen, what to come. And it was sad to sort of see those iconic Jedis that I love so much that I wanted to see more stories of them, Ki-Adi Mundi and Aayla Secura and Plo Koon, you name it. I'll keep going on. We'll go back just 11 or 22 episodes when I talk about them all. But, you know, so it was sad for those things that we didn't actually get to see them play a huge part, but then not knowing the Clone Wars was coming up and knowing that we could watch them, that was cool. So there was that sort of disappointment. And there was also that disappointment and the emptiness to go, that's actually it. That's it. I'm watching the very last Star Wars film. There's going to be no more. Little did we know. So it was kind of interesting, weird times as well. But we're still excited and talked about it at the fan clubs and many more figures to buy. But I think the really good thing that I got out of that is when 3 years later, Clone Wars comes out and it just keeps going on, because people just thought, 2005, and it was this 10-year gap to 2015. No, it was 2008. Clone Wars came out and that kept going until, 2014 or something, I think, something. You know, and then Rebels were around the corner and Force Awakens, so it didn't stop. So it was like it was empty and it was stopping, but it kept going, and it was just sad that I didn't have anyone to talk about it much that was excited about certain characters or character development that happened later on in the Clone Wars, or just seeing another cool Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. You've mentioned the fan club multiple times in the show, and Star Walking is great just from a pure, I mean, you obviously, you know, our member gets involved in events, but just from a pure observational perspective here, I love seeing what that group does, following them on Facebook and the great live streams and conversations that I've had. You know, the timing works out well. Naturally, there's the big time zone difference, but whenever I have the opportunity to drop in and listen and see, you know, people on there, I do love my Australian friends of Star Wars, such as yourself, Dale, Andy, etc., all really great folks out there. I'm curious, though, over the course of the prequels, did you see membership of that grow as the movies were coming out?
That's an interesting one. Because I didn't have any experience of it before The Phantom Menace. Like, I moved actually to Melbourne, say March in 1999, and what the movie came out in May, so a couple of months before Phantom Menace was coming out. It was a plan. I didn't know, didn't plan it before Star Wars was coming out. It was just where I was going to move to. I needed to get out of Canberra. And I discovered this fan club. I don't know where or how. I saw it on a flyer somewhere, probably one of the comic shops. And I thought, I've got to check this out because I've got to meet people and they're like, Star Wars, this will be great. It was huge. It was massive. It was a big venue. There was a lot of people there. I think after Phantom Menace hit, there was still quite a few people hanging around, but it was like it started dying down a bit. And this is because this was the interesting time. We all grown up in the original trilogy. The prequels are just totally different from it in a lot of ways, and which is a great thing. Which is a great thing because why do you want nostalgia in it for the hell of it? George wants to tell a story and put something different. And I think, and it was just a thing of like, it didn't cling to people because we, like I mentioned before, we're not all kids like Anakin. Some people might've had their kids there, probably not, because a lot of people, you didn't get a lot of people that were in that age group to sort of have kids like you did, but the percentage was quite low compared to now when the sequels came out, you know, you have more time. But yeah, it sort of, it did die down a bit, to be honest, and especially after Revenge of the Sith, it died down. I started traveling a lot, so I missed out on a lot of meetings, and I started living overseas a bit and went to university. I did quite a lot of different other things, probably towards not long after Revenge of the Sith, leading up to Force Awakens in that 10-year gap. Yes, there was. But I also found it really hard because I really liked the Clone Wars, but a lot of people didn't, and it was just... Yeah, at the time it was up and down, but yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, but it was hard for me to compare it. As I said, I think it could have been even bigger before the Phantom Menace, mm-hmm. but it was quite. If it dropped down, I didn't notice it too much. Like it was very like a slow decline, and it was sort of yeah. Maybe further off after the movies.
And yeah, would you say has it picked back up? Has the sequel trilogy dialed that up? Because it's the sequel trilogy has definitely dialed up the Star Wars fandom just as a whole in general. When you can look at the difference in sizes between Star Wars Celebration, other conventions. I mean, you now have four different generations of people loving Star Wars because of that. So are you seeing that today, or would you say you're pretty much the same size group of numbers today versus 15, 20 years ago?
No. I'd say maybe especially after Revenge of the Sith, you know, maybe it might have declined a little bit. And as I mentioned, I probably spent a good 3, 4, maybe 5 years of probably not even going there hardly ever at all. So it's probably hard for me to judge. And this is, I'm only talking about the Melbourne. There is, they have the Starwalking have, just once again, people listening out there, Starwalking is the longest running Star Wars fan club in the world. Longest running, because it's been running since 1988. It used to be called something else called Hamels. And so obviously it's start up from people that were into the original trilogy. But they have a Skyforce, which is in Melbourne, but they also have one in Sydney. So I can't mention on Sydney. I don't know how. I wouldn't have a clue. It could have been even more a massive... still going through the prequels. I wasn't there, so I don't know. I'm just talking about just some of the Melbourne meetings I went to. However, yes, in the way it's grown, say when we started having Rebels, even before The Force Awakens, so yeah, 2014, but we knew another movie was coming up. Yes, it picked up a bit. I noticed it when I was going to the meetings and, you know, people starting to bring their kids, new movies with kids, kids watching Rebels or still watching the Clone Wars. Yes. And now just recently they've opened up, as I said, the Skyforce is when we meet in person. They've opened one up in Brisbane. So that's a show of growth. They're going to have, so we now due to COVID, we went back to our first meeting, I think on the 20th of March or something. I couldn't go, I was sick, but we've got another one coming up on the 1st of May, 6 weeks later. One in Melbourne and in Sydney and one in Brisbane. So yeah, I think that's evidence of growth. Like as we've noticed the sequels, like I'm not sure if you felt it when you were watching the prequels growing up, getting into Star Wars, but do you feel that like if you were growing up watching the sequels or even just being an adult in sequels, you got more friends or heaps more people to talk to about Star Wars and it feels a bit more normal? Do you feel that or...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, 100%. I mean, I think about when I was in middle school and high school. So this, at that point, you know, we were years removed from Revenge of the Sith. There were the handful of us who still actively watched Star Wars, either following the Clone Wars or we're reading the books, you know, what was the EU at the time, or comics, or playing some of the video games, or just like, oh, hey, want to come over to my house and watch a Star Wars movie? Like, yeah, that'd be great. You know, that was, we were few and far between, and that was how friendships were made.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you and I are the only two people in our, you know, economics class who are talking about Star Wars right now. You know, and I'm not trying to say, woe is me, the life of a Star Wars fan, because it was still all great and fine, but it definitely was, you know, few and far between that you'd run into somebody. And then I remember, you know, by the time I get to college, there's those, you know, musings of, oh, Disney's bought Star Wars, what's going to happen next? And you start hearing a little more people talk about it. And some people who decide, oh, I'm going to start, let me revisit the prequels that came out when I was a kid so I can get a better understanding of Star Wars. And I'll watch the original movies, so when Force Awakens comes out, I can dive into that. There was all these new people discovering Star Wars for the first time. And something that's been really fun for me in terms of connecting with the larger Star Wars community of new Star Wars fans is getting to hear from the people who are younger than me. So people who are in their early 20s, late teenagers, and not that I run around with teenagers that often, you know, when you know, I do have, you know, extended family or something, when there's like the younger cousins or things like that who are, you know, in high school, and hearing them talking about finding Star Wars because they were too young or disinterested when the prequels came out to see it. And so The Force Awakens was their first movie theater experience, and how they're, you know, all falling in love with it for, you know, the first time. One of my favorite conversations at Star Wars Celebration in Chicago, I guess it's been 2 years already. Wow, holy cow. Gosh. Thank you, COVID,
thank you.
For that.
Thank you very much.
But yes, 2 years ago in Chicago, I was in line for the Celebration exclusive store, and there was this young couple. I think they were probably, you know, 20, 22, 23, something along those lines. So younger than me, but what you'd call, you know, old Gen Z, young millennials, depending where you put that breaking point. And they just happened upon The Force Awakens because they needed a date night movie.
Cool.
And they went to it, and then they decided to start reading the comics. And that's how they fell in love with Star Wars. Wow. So it's really neat seeing that happen with people.
Yeah.
And the whole idea, like, oh yeah, talking Star Wars is not the nerdy thing to do anymore. Just like talking comic book and comic book movies isn't the nerdy thing to do. I mean, it's the highest streamed TV show in history is The Mandalorian, you know?
Yeah.
Highest grossing films, Avengers Endgame, Star Wars The Force Awakens, stuff like that. And it's so cool because it's so reassuring. It's like, wow, you know, I was that kid who continued loving it after the rest of my friends stopped. You know, my friends who stopped loving it because they thought it was a kid's movie I enjoyed when I was a kid. I'm not a kid anymore. No more Star Wars for me. That was so many people.
Yeah.
So, when I was in high school.
And same with me. And so then I was the outsider, and it was so weird to be the outsider in your early 20s. Like, you've got to grow up, and you can't have, you know, Star Wars toys. You can't be dressing up. You can't go to reading all these comics and all this sort of stuff, because hardly anyone was into it. And it was just, it was refreshing that it did have to take until the sequels for more and more people to come into it, because still, animation series was not enough to get more fans in, which is obviously makes sense because it's based on the prequels. The apparently not that what people my age absolutely love that much. So who would really like that? But it was just refreshing to know. But like before, when I'm younger, I'm in my 20s and in my 30s, just you're hanging on the prequels. It's like, oh, we got somebody. Oh, somebody likes Star Wars. Oh, there's this girl. She likes Star Wars. It should be perfect for you. And I'm like, well, you know, like I like other things in my life. And it's just like, but now if that happens, it's just like, well, so what? A lot of people like Star Wars. So what else do we have? Uh-huh. You know, kind of thing. It's interesting. So it's exciting that it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Like, if you're into the originals and the prequels or the sequels didn't do it for you, it's like, think about how much you got out of it, like more generations into Star Wars, and you have other things that you like, such as, you know, the Clone Wars, or now the biggest streaming service, The Mandalorian, which, or now this is what surprised me. It wasn't the sequels that did it. For me, getting more people in and people that were not much fans, that they watched Rogue One and they loved it because it was just completely different, you know, a different tone. Mm-hmm. And they could connect with that movie. They go, actually, you know, I'm in Star Wars, but that Rogue One was pretty interesting. That was pretty cool. And then there was a thing of, you know, Solo, I'm not sure if it would have touched as many non-Star Wars fans' hearts, but it got people going for a bit of fun. I mean, I absolutely loved it. But definitely when The Mandalorian came, my friends are going, we're catching up on season one and season two. Wow, we want to listen to your podcast. You're talking about every episode. I mean, everyone else is sort of doing that too, but I liked doing it for me because it was a fresh experience. You know, we had a chat. I chatted to all my friends. I would say three or four of them out of the whole eight episodes were not huge fans, but they were watching it. And they, as soon as they finished watching it, they were talking about it with me and asking me questions or kind of curious, and it made it so much more exciting. But that just would not happen with just a film because you just got that one film. And it's fantastic where it's grown and where it's gone. I'm so excited, super excited.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's, you know, you're talking about the points with the whole, oh, trying to make, you know, Star Wars as the connection. And you're talking, oh, this girl likes Star Wars. You guys would be perfect for each other. Mm. You know, so shallow. There was when I was in middle school, there was a girl I had a crush on, and I found out that she liked Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker because she thought that he was handsome. Oh. I mean, because he was handsome. He looked good. I'm like, oh my God, that's great. Because I have my hair kind of long because I'm trying to go with that Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker look. So clearly, this is going to work out. It didn't, mind you, and I'm not salty that it did, but that was the mindset. And it's like funny, even to this day, you know, I sometimes find myself apologizing or qualifying to someone if I'm reading a Star Wars book in public, mm-hmm. because I was so used to being kind of teased for it, or at least called out. So, you know, I'll be, you know, on a plane taking a trip for work, or I'll be, you know, at a park outside, or, you know, a coffee shop by myself. I'll be reading a Star Wars book. Someone says, what are you reading? And I'll be like, oh, it's a Star Wars. But, you know, I just read it because it's a good escape. And, you know, I recognize it's not the best literature out there. But, and then what's amazing is people are starting to hush me as I'm like, oh, no, it's okay. I read them too. Like, oh, aren't they great? And they'll start referencing other total strangers, other Star Wars books to me in conversation. I just think that's so cool that that's where we've gotten.
Yeah.
You know, that it's kind of like, you know, the original trilogy is what made people fall in love with Star Wars. And the sequel trilogy is what has pushed it to the mainstream. The prequels were that necessary little jumping point that had to get another generation loving Star Wars so the sequels and Disney Plus and all that stuff could become what it has become. You know, besides from a narrative perspective, you needed the prequels there to just grab that young fan base to keep the love for the franchise going, or else I don't think you could have waited.
No way.
You know, original trilogy comes out less than the 80s and then not a sequel until 2015. That couldn't have happened without those movies in the middle, as maligned as they are to some people. And it's so great that more folks are starting to appreciate, you know, where there is some salvageable parts in films that they otherwise didn't like that much. If not, you know, flat out saying, hey, I was wrong. These films are good, which more and more people are saying that, which warms my heart. So it's all good stuff indeed.
Yeah, I'll just say the final thing to wrap it up for me is that, yeah, we had the originals. That's where it all started. That's what people got excited about. You didn't have much. You had a few Ewok movies and cartoons that just trailed on for a bit up until 85, 86, whatever. Sure. Pretty cool. And the experiment with the holiday special that people, you know, George would rather forget, all those sorts of things. But you didn't have a lot. But that, it closed its books. He closed it at the right time. People were dropping off and growing up and, you know, getting to an older age by the time Jedi was there. But then you still had people like me or people a couple of years younger than me that were six or eight when Jedi came out into the Ewoks. So that kept them going. So the fire was even still a set of fight and light lit then. But there was just that wait until, you're right, the prequels came. I mean, even going back, the special editions, just something that he had to do, and he had to do his prequels. He did what he wanted to do and he loved it, and that was great. And that you can see that through, whether people enjoyed it or not, disappointed. Like you said, you've given a complete example that we never would have understood in our 20s when the prequels are around. Those kids that were your age that were going, wow, there's a kid my age that's the hero. I can connect to this, or, you know, Jar Jar's great, and I love this and that. of the film and all that sort of stuff that we didn't see because we were remembering what we liked in the originals. But you're right, it was that starting point, and from the prequels leads all the way through the Clone Wars. Disney starts getting it, the sequels, Rebels, you name it, other Star Wars story films, but it's just from the prequels all the way up until The Mandalorian. TV live stream that's going to now bring a whole bunch of other new TV shows that will be exciting, that it's just now even changed people that are not fans that are watching The Mandalorian. I love it.
Absolutely. So this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for joining the show. It's always a pleasure having you on. Is there anything that you want to plug, any music you're working on or have recently released that I can share out to the audience to go check out?
At the moment, I am finishing some recordings, but they're not ready to go up on Bandcamp or Spotify yet. But I still do have the Star Wars Volumes 1 and 2, which is just some acoustic stuff. Very basic, but quite fun. Things you do here on our podcast called It's True, All of It, a Star Wars podcast. So that's at Bandcamp Zarbologist. You'll probably see the spelling if you're watching the listening to the podcast, but Zarbologist. Z is Z in American. Nothing else. I'm just enjoying chatting about Star Wars for now, and thank you once again for being on the show, and I'm looking forward to, if this still exists, I hope, episode 66, geez. Oh, maybe you might have other plans for that order 66, episode 66.
I know, there's something very enticing about that. I've been concocting something. It'll be good for you know, those who understand and appreciate the reference will have it for you. So okay. Very evil indeed. But thank you for coming on the show again. Everybody, thank you for lending your ears. It's a pleasure to have you as non-active audience members, but I know that when you hit that subscribe button, wherever it is you get your podcast, a new Padawan gets a lightsaber in their hand. So I don't know, maybe not a fairy growing its wings, but it is something else. So per usual, we will catch you all around the corner.